This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you in? Order now on the McDonald's app. You can also get reward points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome one and all to the Back of the Nest Pre-Review Podcast. I'm your host, Terence Ford. I'm joined by Albert Curley and Sam Hesketh. And this week we'll be looking back to the 2-2 draw against Southampton, and obviously we'll not be looking ahead to the game against Watford on the weekend, where we was all looking forward to going and spending some quality time with Albert. But alas, COVID has put pay to that. You still want us to come though, Albert?
Always welcome around these here parts, my friend.
Would it be at yours, or would we have to meet outside in your beer garden?
I think my extension's pretty well ventilated.
Is it heated?
It's heated. It's warm. It's ventilated. There's room for at least three people in there.
Just a query if there's room for a squirrel with a baguette from last time. I think he's still knocking about.
Strictly outside, that's motherfucker.
You can fit four people in if one of those people is Tom Cruise, so it's fine. Let's get into this. Is biggest false advertising ever.
I'm thirsty. I want a beer. What about you? You want a beer?
Well, not so much from Albert's big can of Heineken. Lovely stuff. Hesketh, you've had friends round for dinner tonight.
Yeah, so I have.
You must have had at least a gin or something.
Well, I could lie and say that this big pint of see-through liquid is gin, which gives me horrible flashbacks to when you bought me some paint stripper gin at a pub before Everton. unsurprisingly, and a shout out to Sydney Eagle on the BBS, who calls me out for this every single week, I'm drinking a pint of water.
Well, Sydney, you not even got that empty can of Red Stripe knocking about that you claim to have drunk.
No, it got too dusty, so I had to clean it up. Unfortunately, it's in the bin now, I'm afraid.
Been there so long, it had faded, and it was more like a pink stripe or something. Like,
yeah,
couldn't hold. Exactly. Yeah,
very good.
Pink stripe. I'm on mulled wine this week. It was hot toddies last week, and now it's mulled wine.
Well, it needs to be said for the listeners who can't see what we can see, Terence is in a Christmas jumper and a Christmas hat. So the mulled wine only goes further to enhance your festive image.
I'm not usually a festive person, but my daughter's getting really into the spirit of things. So she's obsessed with me wearing this hat and Christmas jumpers.
So, has she had a mulled wine?
She has not had a mulled wine.
No.
Dip a bottle into it to put her to sleep, make her sleep through the night. Unfortunately, if you remember last week, we were going to try and get Hambo to join us on this show. And up until today, he was coming on. And then he realized that tonight at 9 o'clock, he had to move his girlfriend's computer desk and chair from her house into his house. So,
oh, it's serious now. Just to check. Really, that's not serious. A euphemism. It's not a euphemism.
What?
I've not heard moving the computer desk and chair used as a euphemism. I just want to check.
Do you know what's really funny is that on my notes here on my phone, I've got written, is that a euphemism? Oh dear, we're one and the same too often.
There's a hard drive joke in there somewhere, but I'm not going to make it.
Oh, Harry the Hornet's hard disk. Drive.
What?
So this week we'll start with me. I've been on German Sky Sports this week.
Yeah.
Different,
hang on.
Different.
Winnie, have you got a jingle for Terence's media watch? Or...
We'll need to get one.
Go on.
Yeah.
What else?
I mean, because if we don't have a jingle for beer blurbs, which I'm assuming you haven't done.
No. No.
So we'll sort that out. We'll get a jingle for beer blurbs and we'll get a jingle for Media Watch. But yeah,
you try and think of something that rhymes with Mariappa. I couldn't do it.
There's got to be a hop of some variety that rhymes with Mariappa.
The Mariappa Grappa, but strictly speaking, it's not a beer.
Well, I am drinking mulled wine, so it would have fit perfectly.
Anyway, come on, let's go back to you. So swinging the spotlight back round to you. Sorry, yeah. What was it? German Sky.
This isn't called the Terence Preview Podcast or anything, mate. German Sky Sports. It's not what you know, it's who you know, basically. And my wife's sister's best mate is a commentator on Sky Sports in Germany. And earlier in the year, when he was commentating on Palace Brentford, I had a call with him where he actually wanted to understand the history of the club and all about our DNA and, you know, everything that had happened over the summer. And so, very unusual behavior from a commentator to do that, to phone a real fan and get some info. But yeah, he also produces a show on Sky Sports out there. So they wanted to talk about Patrick Vieira's tactics and how he's changed everything that the club are doing. Very, very different sort of conversation about football than you see on our English Sky Sports. Very, very in-depth. But yeah, good one to impress the father-in-law with, basically.
Do they call it German Sky Sports?
It's just called Sky Sports.
Or is it Sports. Just Sky Sports? Yeah.
Sky Sports DE, Deutschland.
And did you have to do it in German?
No. So the guy asked the question in English and German and then translates what I say into German. I did open with German though, to say like thank you for having me. But my German's terrible, so I'll answer in English if that's okay.
You know, like fucking Marco Bielsa.
got some like really like Cockney Scouse, not Cockney Yorkshire lad. I don't know why, but whenever I hear him speak, I just think Cockney. He's translator, but he's not Cockney, is he?
Yeah, probably not.
Probably not.
Right, so that was yes. Sky. What else you been on?
And then I literally came off the call. It was done over Skype. I literally pushed hang up on Skype, and the moment I pushed it, a message came through on my phone from Alex Howe from the BBC. Palace fan Alex Howe.
Alex Howe, how is he? All right.
Yeah, he's good. Yeah.
Nice.
Did you stalk him in a marathon march as well or something?
Never heard of him. Sorry.
asking me to go and talk about COVID passports.
But that they'll get anybody on to talk about COVID these days.
Yeah, I think he got my number from Jim Daly, so I think they were after him first. But he lives quite far from the stadium. Well, he got about eight seconds of footage out of me from about a 10-minute interview. BBC weren't really after going on about me saying how easy it is to fake lateral flow results.
Did you go on an anti-Saudi Arabia rant as
no,
well?
Not this, a... not this.
Oh no, it's him.
It's him. No, but it's just my whole point was, you know, putting the COVID checks in you make people get there earlier, you're bunching people up together for longer. Everyone's in the concourse because it's cold. So you're basically making thousands of people be closer together for longer for effectively something that can be falsified. So people who aren't vaccinated could say, I've done a lateral flow, when in reality they haven't. So you just, I'm just more down the line, you should trust people to do the right thing effectively. And then that way you don't, you're shaking your head. I know my wife did the same thing.
And they only used 8 seconds. Funny that.
Yeah, but no, I'm all for it. If it means the stadium stay open, and that's what we've got to do for them to stay open, then that's fine. But I just think just doing it to tick boxes, I don't know. People going to go. If people want to go, they're going to go. And whether they're doing the right thing or not, it's still going to happen. But hopefully that doesn't mean we end up getting shut down. I don't know. So yeah, so that was the BBC. So that was for the English side of the family. They were very happy.
And for the match ball you were on?
For the what?
for the match ball you were on a third broadcasting network?
The Back of the Nest preview podcast, surely.
Yes.
Well, there you go. Best till last.
Yes. But then last night after the game, went to the Victory. And friend of the pod, Penny, who we'll get into in the next bit as well, she brought her friend Nick Moran, who some of you may know. You might have worked with him, Albert, on Harry Potter.
Yep.
And he's in one of my favourite movies of all time, in Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels. And I've always been, oh, I want to meet him.
Was he wearing his half Palace, half Arsenal shirt?
He did say Simon Jordan had called him a fucking traitor for coming, because it was his first game after 11 years. But but yeah, so there was me in the Victory, main actor from one of my favourite films, and I was in a Christmas jumper last night as well. Felt like a right Muppet. Very, very sad times for me. Basically, I got to stop buying Christmas jumpers is what I've got to.
How many have you got?
But I've only got two. I've got two Palace ones. Well, I think this year, Joel Ward just looks so good in it. I just couldn't help myself. But I don't look like Joel Ward in it, unfortunately. And yeah, I got like a really rascal one from a couple of years ago, a red one. Just horrible. I don't know why I did it, but they're very cozy for inside the house. Anyway, look, I've talked way too much on this already. But Penny did post a picture on Twitter of the old dear who sells knitwear outside Aldi, Hesketh. We were all delighted. I think all of Twitter, all of Palace Twitter was delighted to see her.
Yeah, I mean, I used to go via Fulton Heath, via Norwood Junction, sorry, all the time. And when I was like really young, and she's been there for ages and ages and ages. And I had heard that she hadn't, so a few people said, I haven't seen her around for ages. And everyone was a little bit worried. Yeah. Feared the worst, yeah. But yeah, like you say, Penny put a picture of her up, and she's back, and she had her bag of knitwear. Which is great. It's good to see that she's doing all right. Apparently she was in good spirits and that. So nice little Christmas story.
Yeah, it was lovely as well. Like just the amount of people that were just genuinely happy in the comments underneath that she was there. Unlike Back in the Nest Tom Fancett, who was like, yeah, but isn't she a fucking ripoff and charging 30 quid a scarf? I was like, well, she does hand knit them, mate. Like,
yeah, support your local community, mate. Come on.
Exactly. Exactly. And everyone just assumed she'd come back out of hiding because I was wearing one of her scarves in my BBC interview. So
she's such a fan of Terence Ford that she was like, 30 quid.
I did. Of course I did. But you only need one. Like, unless you lose it, you only need one. The quality is amazing.
Fair enough. I've just got an image of you walking past her on your way to your interview saying, listen, I'm about to do an interview for the BBC. How's about you give me one of those for free?
I'll give you national exposure.
No, absolutely not. It's nothing like that. I've always supported the local community, even more so now I live here. I do everything I can to support the local shops, except from that freaking news agents on the corner that keeps refusing to take my return parcels and saying their machine's broken because they've got too many parcels to return. I won't get into that.
What is it? Christmas jumpers?
You never know what size you got to buy them in.
Sorry, can we just add to the jingle list? Can we add Terence Ford's local community gripes? Please.
It's his version of points of view, isn't it? That's what it is. He's joined the bandwagon. Yeah.
Didn't you want this with that next door app or whatever it's called? What's it called?
But I don't bring that to the pod, mate.
Big up anyone who goes on next door. You get some absolute. Come on, you must have an example to hand.
No. I'd have to dig them out.
They're all about him. That's the problem.
Albert's just going on there to voyeur on himself. What people were saying about fucking that guy over there is building another extension.
He's walking around with nothing but a Troy Deeney shirt on.
You get away with it around here.
Oh, dearie me. We're above Brighton. That's where we're going next. Albert, I thought they were going to win the league. A few months back, they were all there saying they've cracked it under Potter. They were in the top four. They were miles ahead of Palace. What's happened to them?
They've become too accustomed to celebrating draws, I think. not that they managed that last night. Although, when our game finished, because I didn't go last night, when our game finished, I did switch over to the Brighton game to see, you know, to see them hopefully remain in the losing position. But part of me was like, I do hope they score here, because it is hilarious watching Mopay fucking celebrate one all draws like he's fucking bagged the winner in a World Cup final. But yeah, shame. The ground was fucking well empty towards the end of that game. And I think it's right, you know, was it a week ago, 2 weeks ago, where Potter was in his press conference saying, I must have missed a bit of history or something, you know, because he's getting dug out for Brighton not being in the top four. I mean, it's a sorry state of affairs. They've definitely sort of come down with a bit of a bump, haven't they, which nobody likes to see.
You did say there that you was wondering about Neil Mopay scoring a late winner, but of course he's out with COVID.
Who isn't?
In insert Jose Mourinho meme of if I speak, I could be in big trouble. So I prefer not to speak. Oh. So anyway, Brighton are winless in 12 now, which is the longest winless streak in all of European football. Every time they say that stat, it's usually the top five European leagues is what they're talking about.
So. I thought you were going to say, I've just made that up.
No, it's absolutely true. And what's beautiful about it is the tweet that kind of, you know, displayed this stat was Lewis Dunk just sat on the floor looking miserable. And I mean, there's a chance he's going to be out of our game as well, because they're talking 8 to 10 weeks for him. So very unlikely.
What, in prison?
Oh, dearie me. He's going to get the cell right next door to the other fucking dickhead in midfield, Basuma. Thanks, Albert. Thank you. Thank you for saying what the rest of us weren't.
Sorry.
So, Watford, we're obviously not going to be previewing Watford because it's been postponed. So we will get into talking about Southampton from last night. Hesketh, thoughts on the game being postponed? Seems to be a bit of a weird application of the rules going on at the moment. You've had Leicester come out and say, well, we had 9 players unavailable and we were made to play. And seemingly you're getting teams with fewer players out who are actually getting the games called off for them. Bit weird.
Yeah, it is a bit weird. I was thinking that because I think the thing I read, they were like, oh, we cannot put a team out and that's why we can't play, which I'm a little bit cynical about because I'm pretty sure they could. Squad of 25 plus some of their under 23s. I'm sure you can knock a team out. It's a shame. I was quite looking forward to it, much as I hate the place and the stadium. No offense, Albert. You know, it's always a good atmosphere because we always take a lot, don't we? And, you know, I suppose I was fairly confident that we might actually get a result with them having like Saar out and stuff like that. So it's a bit of a shame that it's been postponed, but I think there's four games, aren't they, called off now. So it was not really much of a surprise when their Burnley game was called off.
I thought it was Saar's putting everyone out.
Hey.
What do you reckon, Albert? You're obviously your local game, really easy for you to get to. So good for a midweek one for you when it's eventually replayed.
Yeah, well, yeah, you say that, but sod's law, there'll be something that means I can't go. Yeah, I can't say I've looked into the way the rules are being applied to why certain games are being called off and others aren't, but, you know, the moment there, yeah, that Burnley game was called. It was sort of almost a, I kind of hope they cancel it now rather than Saturday morning or something like that. And yeah, it was obvious that it wasn't going to happen. It's annoying, really. I finished work tomorrow. I was looking forward to a day out at the football, seeing some mates, you know, that includes you at the football, obviously, and sort of getting into the festive spirit. But no. I mean, there's a little part of me that thinks I'm kind of glad it's been postponed because I thought we looked quite leggy against Southampton. They looked a lot fitter than us. And, you know, what would have been our third game in the space of 6 days, 7 days might have been a stretch too far. But for personal reasons, I'm upset. Footballing reasons, maybe less.
And Hesketh, can you see all of the Premier League getting cancelled this weekend? I mean, it seems ludicrous that twice in the couple of weeks now, Spurs fans have made it to Burnley and Watford fans have made it to Burnley before it's been called off, which, I mean, lol. But
yeah,
it does kind of, it's not right, is it? It shows that, you know, there's clearly not going to be any refunds for those guys, trains tickets and all of that sort of stuff, or that petrol money and so on.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, both games were called off way closer.
Way too late. It's way too late. They didn't know they all had COVID in the morning.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, I actually had a look at the tweets from Watford's account when they said it was postponed. And basically every reply were Watford fans saying, well, I'm already here. And now I've just got to basically turn around and come back, especially bloody Burnley. It's nothing to do in Burnley when you're there for the football. Never mind when you fucking just got to just hang around. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they just like knocked all this weekend's games on the head. And, you know, I saw a few people saying they might do it for the Christmas ones. And again, it might be, I mean, there's always that argument every year about whether we should have a winter break in England, because basically everywhere else does. And you think if we have a winter break this year, then none of this would be, well, it wouldn't be nearly as big of a problem as it seems to be. I suppose the argument against that is there's AFCON and then this weird World Cup next year. So the season's already sort of knackered as it is, and condensing it even more is going to be a nightmare. But, you know, again, the big teams will be all right with that. So I'm sure the Premier League don't care.
Yeah, and there's talk about the AFCON maybe getting called off anyway, which obviously would massively benefit us with a lot of our players going. Can either of you got any stories from getting to games that have been postponed last minute?
I thought you were going to ask me if I was going to go to AFCON.
No, if it does go ahead, I think Sky have got every game of the AFCON this year. So watch it on there. But yeah, you've been to Everton a few seasons back. Did you get up to that one?
No, I didn't, thankfully. I know friend of the show, Joe Walker, was on, I think, the official coach for that one. That was one where it was like really windy and the roof blew off or something.
Yeah, so wasn't that the one that everyone, a lot more people than normal, took the coach because they laid it on for free?
Yeah, and they basically got into Liverpool and then were told there's no game. I mean, like we've talked about this on here, but like the official coach is pretty soul sapping as it is to do like a trip all the way up to Liverpool without even the sort of benefit of seeing Palace play, just sort of turning around and going back again. That's pretty grim stuff.
Yeah, we stayed up overnight. So we'd got there in the afternoon and were heavily pissed before kickoff. And then, you know, we literally walked outside and you could see the reason they did it because tiles were coming off of roofs of buildings.
Yeah.
And it was happening. They were coming off the building we was in.
Unaided.
So you, yeah, unaided. Yeah. You... So you had to actually, like, you know, hide from them. But then obviously without kind of slowing down the drinking rate in the 90 minutes of the game, I don't remember much past like 10 p.m. that night, to be honest. I just remember back in mid to late 90s, maybe just touching 2000s, Bradford away was called off. Remember being there, that was literally getting there. And then as we arrived and parked up, the radio was like, game's been postponed. It's like, great.
I think the only one that I can remember, it wasn't an away game, thankfully. We were playing Luton around Christmas at home sometime and I got to Fulton Heath and then basically got called off. But obviously that's like 10 minutes away on the train from me, so it's not really a problem.
Yeah, and I remember getting to Luton one Boxing Day. That was 96-ish, 95, 96, somewhere around that. And we'd actually got in a black taxi to get there because it was... we were running late because the weather had affected the trains and then only to get there for it to be called off. Frozen pitches at Selhurst Park, that don't happen anymore, does it? Okay. Southampton. Albert, are we disappointed with the point or are you happy?
That's a good question. If you asked me before the game, would you take a point? I would have, hand on heart, probably I'd have said no. You know, I thought we were good against Everton. I don't think we were, again, I mean, it sort of sums up our season. I thought we had spells where we were really good, but apart from, you know, if it wasn't for a few decent, greater saves, you know, that Everton game could have been a lot different as shit.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
As they were on the whole. But yeah, going into the Southampton game, I thought, you know, we could start a bit of a run here. You know, it was, you know, basically it was the same team, wasn't it? And you sort of thought, yeah, there was real bright spots in that Everton game. I've sort of mentioned it already. I thought we looked, 3 minutes in, we're 1-0 up and it all seems happy days. But all of a sudden, we just seemed to wilt a little bit and we looked, I thought they looked, whether it was confidence or fitness, they just looked way more punchy than we did. And we really struggled. But obviously, getting a point out of a game where I couldn't see us getting back into it, yeah, I was happy with it at the end. But, I mean, it's another game that you look at along with Newcastle, Brighton, and you think, you know, we should have come away with 3 points there, really. Or, you know, if we're as good as we think we are, then, yeah, we needed to come away with 3 points. And I don't think we almost didn't turn up.
Yeah, you say it's the same team now, but and obviously Butland aside, it was Hesketh. But there seemed to be a switch of Kiati and Hughes, which seemed to be confusing a lot of people. Any thoughts about why that might have happened?
No, I had this conversation with my mate at the game as well, actually, and I can't really think of a reason because it worked so well against Everton. I agree with what Albert said, that there were spells against Everton where it was a little bit flat, but I think the midfield three were the best, sort of the best part of the game on Sunday. And to fiddle about with it a little bit was a bit confusing. I mean, obviously, if it comes off and it works well, then no one cares. But we talked about Hughes, you know, being next to Gallagher and letting Gallagher sort of go way more forward worked well. And Kiate's been in really good form as the sort of furthest midfielder back. So, yeah, I don't know. Again, I don't know if it's legs, like Albert said, like whether we were just a bit tired. But I was the same with him. I thought once we went 1-0 up so early, you just think, well, that will knock Southampton's confidence and we'll just push on. And it just didn't really happen. But I think, you know, our first half performance was pretty crap, especially after they scored. But I thought we were all right in the second half. You know, I think if you look at the game as a whole, probably a draw is a fair result. Neither team were brilliant. They had the better of the first half. We had the better of the second. So
yeah, it's weird, is it? Because we obviously take the lead early. Absolutely fantastic tackle from Hughes on Romeo to break up the play and open it up. I mean, Caballero, I'm not sure what he's doing in goal and why he's laying down there when Zaha would have shot straight at him otherwise. And I think...
No wonder he was training at AFC Wimbledon days before.
But it's nuts, right, that we see that he was that poor from that effort and we didn't then test him from range a couple of times, just, you know, get some shots on target and see what happens. Yeah, and so we took lead. And then I think... if Edouard scores, you know, when Zaha cuts it across for him and he opens his body up and tries to slot it if he's right, if that goes in, I think, you know, Southampton have very recent history, multiple times of absolutely folding. They lost 9-0 twice in the last couple of years. So, you know, if we go 2-0 up there, I think that game's over and it's a bit of a walk in the park for us. But it was like at that moment, it sort of like kicked him into gear a bit, and then all of a sudden they just started pressing on us higher up the pitch and higher and higher, and we couldn't pass through it. And Vieira talked about it after the game. And Albert, did you see a bit of a lot of trying to pass out from the back? I found was Joel Ward and Tyrone Mitchell really were the ones who were not able to handle it the most, really tend to really gave the ball away a lot or pass the ball straight into touch and things like that. And they really, really seem to struggle under that press. And it's something that we've got to worry about if other teams are going to identify that as well.
Yeah, it seemed like every time we had a goal kick, Southampton, like the Southampton press was like gained another yard on us. And then we'd struggle with that. And then we'd get a goal kick again and they'd be, you know, a yard further up. And to the point you couldn't really tell who the defenders were because there were so many Southampton players in our box almost anticipating the short kick. And we did struggle. You know, both fullbacks, I thought had a not a great game. And I really like the passing out from the back. I really like it that we're trying to do it. But again, when you're 2-1 down and at the point sort of struggling to get back in the game, and like you say we're not getting out of our own half. Like I say, the ball's being kicked out into touch, or we're just giving it straight back in the midfield. It's like, well, you know, just go long that just go long once, you know, just punt it down the pitch and see what happens, you know, because you just have to create that sort of that pressure release and try something different. And you know, if Southampton are pressing as much as they are, you know, if you go long, they've left four men up the pitch, and so you might be able to mix it up and catch them a little bit. I mean, you can only really do it when Benteke's on the pitch, and he wasn't on the pitch for most of that game. But yeah, I like I say, as a plan A, I think it's great. But with all managers, and you know, including Roy Hodgson in this, when plan A is not working, you know, we do have to consider what plan B is. And there wasn't a huge sign of having a clear plan B, and it was more of a sort of stubborn, we're going to carry on doing this, and it could have been worse, to be honest.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there were a couple of times early in the second half where we sort of hit the ball down the line and just ran after it, and it seemed to work. It seemed to sort of getting behind their defence. And then we didn't really do it again for a while. And it's just sort of like Albert says, I get that we've got a game plan to pass out from the back and build up the attacks. But if you see something working like that and you can spring it on them, and we've got pace, you know, I mean, Wilf's not, he might have lost a yard here and there, but he's no slouch. You just think, and Edouard as well. I mean, Edouard's a pretty fast bloke. So I'm the same, you know, we were talking about it during the game. We were like, just mix it up a bit. You know, I don't think Butland looked particularly comfortable with the ball at his feet. So, you know, hoofing it up the pitch every now and again probably would have helped him out, would have relieved the pressure a bit, and maybe would have got us somewhere. Because I don't think their defence is, other than Livramento, I don't think their defence is much cop. So, yeah, I agree with Al, but I think we just need to try something different, if only once or twice, just to sort of spring a surprise on the opposition.
Yeah, I was convinced that Benteke was going to come on at half time for that exact reason. It was just, you know, we had to stop them from pressing us. We had to stop it from happening, because we were just showed time and again that we couldn't pass our way through it. So if you start just lumping the ball forward every time, they can't commit as many people onto the edge of your box. And the times we did do it was when the times we looked dangerous with it. And particularly when Benteke came on, they clearly struggled with it quite a lot. Free kick for the James Ward-Prowse guy. Now, I mean, I think it's only Thierry Henry and David Beckham who are ahead of him now in terms of most Premier League free kicks scored. That was the 11th time he's done it. It's kind of like from that range, it's like a penalty for him, really. Mm-hmm. You know, he can go either side. He can get loads of whip on it. Makes it really, really difficult. Now, there's been a lot of nonsense chatted on social media in recent weeks about Guaita and that Butland should be coming in. Should he be doing better there, Albert? Gets fingertips to it. Should he be saving it? Do you see Guaita saving it, or is it just a brilliant free kick?
It's a brilliant free kick. I'm really clenching my jaw having to concede any sort of praise to little racist rat boy. Yeah, I mean, it's a great free kick. Yeah, that you can do the whole Butland takes a little step to his left, which probably does him no favours, trying to get back the other way and you know, get a stronger hand on the ball. But, you know, I don't look at it and think, my first reaction definitely wasn't, oh, great, it would have saved that. It's a really good free kick. And, you know, we can all do what ifs, but I don't think Guaita stands much a better chance of getting a hand to it, to be honest. You know, now
what
if you said
the
Wayne Hennessy
decision.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the free kick decision, because you watch it on TV, so you would have probably got a couple of angles of it. In the stadium, it felt like you immediately saw Will Hughes just lose it. Like, it was soft. Yeah.
Do you know what? And again, I hate to sit here and concede any sort of slack the other way. It is really, really, really soft. It is really soft. However, if that was Wilf trying to go past someone on the edge of the opposition area, we would all be screaming for it. So it is one of those. There was worse decisions, but yeah, it was soft.
Do you know what's really bizarre? And Simon Hooper, I think, is probably the worst referee in the Premier League. It's between him, I mean, of the established referees, because there was that new one we had earlier this season who was had his first game and he was dreadful. But Simon Hooper is consistently bad. And that's why I was absolutely shocked that he allowed that Will Hughes tackle to go for our goal in the early part of the game. But he then just, you know, conformed to type and he was just dreadful. Just time and again, he just makes awful decisions on both sides as well. You know, it's not just us. He's just a terrible referee. And I think that the standard of refereeing, is it getting worse? Is that just me? I don't know. But of course,
It's getting worse, and it's not helped by, and as much as I'm a fan of it in principle, it's not helped by the VAR scenario at the moment. You know, the moment when your refereeing standard is poor, the moment VAR says, I think you should look at that, like, you know the referee's going to fucking change his mind, because they're... I mean, I've watched Match of the Day for quite a few weeks, but I can't recall in recent memory this season, a referee being asked to go and look at something and then walking away from a monitor and sticking to his original decision. I think there's so much uncertainty and inexperience there that the moment that, you say, go and review it, that's basically, you know that it's going to be, whatever it is, the decision's going to be reversed.
Yeah, I've only remembered this season seeing it overturned once, and that was in Serie A, where the referee went over and was like, you could see very clearly he was having an argument over his headset with the VAR official, being like, no, I think it's a penalty. You're wrong to tell me to overturn this. It's definitely a penalty. Look, here's the contact, blah, blah, blah. And then he decided to give the penalty. And it was a weird one because it was like, it's definitely not a clear and obvious error that he's given the penalty here. Like, there is absolutely contact. You can see why he's given it. And he stood his ground and fought with the official, which we just don't tend to see here. But the worst thing about it is, because of this clear and obvious error, that James Maddison won, the penalty that was given to Leicester the other day. It's wrong. Everyone knows that's not a penalty. Everyone knows it's not a penalty. But VAR doesn't look at it because it's not a clear and obvious error. But it's just wrong. Like, if everyone knows it's wrong, if everyone in football is looking at it saying that's not a penalty, then VAR should be able to step in and say that's not a penalty. But yeah, and it probably is affecting their performance. You're probably right, but Simon Hooper was shit before VAR, so it's not impacting his game.
I tried, Simon. I'm sorry, mate.
We've got now. 4 minutes later, they score again. Is it Bourgeois?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Bougie.
He was only half fit, but he had a fucking brilliant. He's a good player, isn't he? Particularly for someone who was half fit.
He's a bit of a tank, isn't he?
Yeah.
As soon as he hit it, like where we stand, I'm in block D. And as soon as he hit it, it was in. Like, you could see it was in. It was just arrowed in, like a laser guided into the bottom corner. It was a good hit. Obviously, a bit of a loose pass for him to get the ball. And I think
from the golden boy as well, wasn't it?
From the golden boy, yeah. And I think at the time I was like, why the fuck is no one, closing him down? But when I watched it back on the telly, He didn't take too many touches before he smashed a shot in. So I was like, well, you got to say fair enough. It's a pretty good hit. He did go absolutely mad at the main stand, though, when he was celebrating.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no idea why, but he seemed like well up for it.
Yeah.
You bang a goal in like that away from home and see what you do, because that's probably I'd do something similar.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he was just loving it. I think he was just loving life. And then the closer he's got to the main stand, have just started to stand up in bunches and hurl loads of abuse. So he's just giving it back. I mean, I know. When I was younger, those things used to piss me off way more than they do now. Hence my eternal hatred of Grant Ledbetter, for example. but these days, I'm just kind of like, yeah, I'd probably do the same. Yeah, screw it. and Selhurst, really, you felt it in the crowd, just was kind of like, how has this all gone so tits up? We could have been 2-0 up a minute ago, and now all of a sudden we're 2-1 behind. What did you think of the fight back in the second half, Albert? Were you impressed that we showed the bottle to come back? Impressed with the substitution from Vieira to actually get us back into it?
Yeah, I think it's, it's always good to see a bit of fight back, because again, and I feel like I'm going to get accused of having an agenda, but like under Roy, it was like we would rarely look like getting back into a game from in those sorts of games. To see us get, I'm on record, if somebody wants to screen grab it. I said in our chat, I was like, I just can't see us getting anything out of this. It's going to be one of those. And then might have been maybe 3 minutes later that we equalised. And my wife laughed at me because I said a rude word, apparently in quite a funny voice. and at that point you think, okay, well, there's enough time here to, and again, I've got a mate, a close mate, who's a massive Southampton fan. And he was desperate to bet money with me that they would concede again he was like, do you know, he said something like they've thrown away 73 points from winning positions under Hasenhüttl, which is mega. So he was like, do you want to bet? He wasn't like if, he was like, do you want to bet when you're going to score your third? And I was like, I'm not doing it. So like, it was like we're both trying to like not back our own teams, which was quite perverse.
Well, I think for them, that was before that game, they'd played 17 Premier League away games this calendar year, and they'd only won two and drawn two and lost the other 13. And the two wins were like Sheffield United and maybe Newcastle. Like, they were two of the lower down teams, that's for sure. But before we move on, I was going to say, Jordan Ayew finally scores, finally gets his goal, Hesketh.
Yes.
That his hard work and good performances of late has probably deserved.
Yeah, he absolutely deserves it. I know that he's become a bit of a pariah because he hasn't scored in 43 games, whatever it is. But especially in the last sort of month or so, and I think he's been all right all season, but in the last sort of month or so, his work rate has been like top notch. He's looked good going forward. He's sort of tracked back well. All the stuff you want, you just need him to score that one goal. And obviously, he missed up at Old Trafford, as we discussed the other week. And he had a chance early on against Everton. I just want him to come. But he took his goal well yesterday. I thought when the ball sort of went across the goal, I thought he was just going to try and smash it back across the 6-yard box. But yeah, got it in. I mean, I know it was only 4 yards out or whatever, but it was at an angle, wasn't it? So when you haven't scored for 43 games, I'm pretty sure even that looks bloody impossible. He almost smiled as well. Can you imagine when he scored? but yeah, like I like Jordan Ayew, and I think he's been really good lately. So it was great for him to get that goal.
To be fair, I wouldn't be smiling if I had these airline. sorry, Albert. but the latest snubs from the social media world of Palace fans and the absolutes, like from result to result, this person's shit or this person's amazing, it's Edouard who come in for a bit of stick. Now, people seem to forget, a lot of people forget, he's 23 years old, still a youngster. Still learning, still very, very new to Premier League football. This is a brand new standard for him, the level he's playing at here. I think, Albert, we've agreed he certainly wasn't at his best last night, but as Hesketh has said repeatedly in the chats today, when you're not at your best and you get basically two assists, I think he will obviously officially gets credit one, but won't for the IU goal. But you know, very clearly, his shot gets brilliantly saved by Caballero and falls to Ayew's feet. But bit nuts that everyone's shit one week or amazing the following week. So I can't keep up.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in you know this week's episode of Edouard, yeah, I mean, it was quite a hot topic on the Back of the Nest WhatsApp chat. But, you know, I think there's a real lack of nuance in football opinion these days. I mean, there's a real lack of nuance in any opinion these days. But, you know, yeah, I think the official assist to Zaha, it's a fairly sort of routine pass, and Zaha does the rest and bags a goal. The second assist, as you've said, Terence, strictly speaking, it's a shot that's been parried. I mean, the fantasy points say what they say, and I was grateful to receive them. But, you know, at the same time, we're allowed to say he didn't have a great game. He missed a chance, two big chances. He didn't have a great game, but I'm not going to suggest that he gets dropped. I'm not calling for him to be sold. I'm not using any expletives about him saying he's this or that. You know, whenever our next game is, Christ, if he starts on the bench and Benteke starts, I can make an argument for that, because I think Benteke's probably the more in form, you know, certainly got more, you know, recent potency in front of goal. But do we write him off for one mediocre performance against Southampton? No, we don't. He was decent against Everton, probably made less of an all-round impact in terms of assists and all that sort of stuff, but was, you know, was busy and making the ball stick and, you know, and trying to make things happen. players are allowed bad games. And, you know, again, as I've sat here countless times and defended Christian Benteke over the years, I'd be a massive hypocrite if I sat here and started slagging off Edouard. We just got to, like, give him time, have a bit of patience, realise he's young, and the goals will come, because he's definitely a finisher, but he's still in a team that doesn't create a wealth of chances.
Mm. Nicely put. Hesketh, final parts of the game, it kind of felt like high jeopardy. Like, were we going to get a winner, or were we going to concede a winner to Southampton? I think based on how it sort of ebbed to and fro, probably happy with a point at the end of it.
Yeah, let me tell you, if 6 years ago I'd have seen Shane Long and Theo Walcott coming on a subs, I would have shit my pants. Because we definitely would have let in goals against them. In fact, to be fair,
I still hear Shane Long.
Yeah, yeah. I did say when he came at light.
Nearly scored with his first touch.
when he was stood in the sideline waiting to come on and we noticed it was him, I looked at my mate that I stand with and we were both like, oh, shit. And yeah, like Albert said, the bloke's like 5'1" and he's winning a completely free header of his first touch. Thankfully, straight at the goalie. But yeah, I mean, that's fair. You know, obviously we brought on Benteke and Elise and sort of went for it a bit. And I thought Elise had some really nice touches. One unbelievable bit of control where he killed a ball with his right foot. And so you sort of, you know, him, Gallagher and Ward had a couple of little sort of 1-2s or whatever and got the ball in. But at the same time, there was a bit right at the end where Ward-Prowse was sort of running parallel to the edge of our area. And I 100% thought he was going to curl it in the top corner. So, yeah, I said earlier, a draw is a fair result, but whenever we go behind and don't lose, you know, pessimist I am, I always think that's pretty decent. And yeah, we gave away a couple of free kicks right near the end there, and I was just fearing the worst. So the fact that we came away from it unscathed from those is certainly a positive.
Yeah, the classic who scored weakness of failing and fouling players in dangerous areas is still our number one weakness. You say Elise had some good touches there, but the most, as I saw it described, as a rancid opinion of all was from one of DR's YouTube harem saying that Elise offers nothing and we need to loan him out. I don't think we need to touch on that opinion anymore. Just sort of having a light chuckle. Man of the match. And then we'll end it. Who was your man of the match, Albert?
Wilf.
No, yeah, less abuse for Wilf last night. What about you, Sam?
I hadn't even thought about it. I'll just go Jordan Ayew. I don't think anyone was standout, but Ayew was all right and he scored. So I'll give it to him.
Yeah, I thought Ayew had a decent game. I thought Zaha was decent. Obviously, got his goal. But yeah, Jordan Ayew was probably the best of an average bunch on the day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So anyway, I think we've run a little bit long here. So thanks everyone for listening. Obviously, we're at a stage now where we don't know what's going to happen over the coming weeks. So I can't really give you any schedule of what podcasts are going to be. Not that we ever get fucking right anyway. So, yeah, just, I guess, stay tuned to the socials. If football gets called off, I'm sure we'll probably club together a couple of podcasts try and get some, I don't know, guests or something. Fuck, try and get guests. We can't even get Hambo on these days, so I don't know, we're going to get bloody guests to come on as well. But yeah, we'll see what happens, and say keep people to the socials, and that will let you know what we are going to put out or not put out. Hesketh, thank you. Albert, thank you for joining and mixing things up with a match report this week instead of a preview. And thank you to everyone.
Let's not make it a habit.
Let's not make it a habit. Yeah, we're so bad at it. Anyway, thanks to everyone for listening, and until the next time, up the palace.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Your mate's already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.